Shema Israel.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program, Operation Hebrew, was written by Mark Siegel. The little girl next door is beginning a process we all recognize as important, the process of becoming literate. Pretty soon, perhaps, she'll be reading.
Up, dog, up. Jump, dog, jump.
There is a large controversy at the moment about the way she learns to read, or when and how.
Down, dog, down. Sit, dog, sit.
But there's complete agreement on the importance of her being able to read, to know and understand the language. Her mother, in fact, is quite proud of her.
The dog jumped up. The dog jumped down. Down, dog, down. Up, dog, up.
Her mother is proud and happy, because language is the beginning of knowledge, and knowledge is the key to understanding. And once you have understanding, well, anything can happen. You might even marry a man who one day will become President of the United States. At least 5,000 miles away from the little girl next door, there is a small country which has become, in the past 7 years, almost a single gigantic classroom. The country is Israel, and tens of thousands of its citizens are also engaged in the process of becoming literate in the language of the country, Hebrew.
Boker, 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 ba, boker, ba, boker, ba. Boker ba la boda, boker ba la boda, boker boker ba, boker.
Like the little girl next door, they sing to learn the language.
Boker, boker, boker ba, boker ba la boda, boker ba la boda, boker ba la boda, boker boker ba.
The basic process is the same, but there are several differences between these students and the little girl next door.
Boker boker ba. Boker ba la boda, boker ba la boda.
The difference is not in the intensity of the students. It's not in their concentration or in their earnestness as they learn to form the words of an unfamiliar language. The major difference is in age. Most of these students have children of their own. Many have grandchildren the age of the little girl next door.
Boker, boker, ba. Boker, 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 ba.
This is the story of a unique experiment in a unique land, the story of Operation Hebrew, a nationwide effort in Israel to retain men, women, and children of all ages in a common language, the revitalized ancient tongue of Hebrew. Just how complicated a job that is in Israel becomes apparent almost immediately, even to a tourist. You walk down a street in Tel Aviv. Your mission? To get some shirts washed by next Tuesday.
Shalom. Shalom.
Shalom. Excuse me, do you speak English?
English? No. Sprechen Sie Deutsch?
Oh, no, no. I'm afraid I don't speak German.
Romanian?
No, not Romanian either. You don't speak French, by any chance?
Français?
Yes, French.
Ah, mais oui, je parle français un petit peu. Qu'est-ce que vous voulez, monsieur?
Oh, well, just to get my shirts washed. Oh, I see, you're from France.
France? No, monsieur. Greece. Parlez-vous le grec?
It's an amusing story to tell when you return to the United States. The story of the Israeli from Greece with whom you conversed in French. But the implications of the story are many.
We take a quiet pride in the fact that in the course of an average day, upwards of 60 different languages are spoken in conversation.
Yes, I can understand that.
We also feel a quiet desperation in that fact. It's estimated that only half the population is completely literate in Hebrew. About 200,000 have no working basis in the language at all.
How often do we consider the importance of common language? In the United States, not too frequently. In Israel, it is a matter of moment-by-moment importance.
Order, please. Order. Let us have order in the courtroom. Now, let us proceed. Does the defendant admit to the charge?
He does, Your Honor.
Can't he speak for himself, attorney?
Not in Hebrew, Your Honor. His native language is Persian.
But he admits assaulting the plaintiff?
Not the plaintiff, Your Honor. The plaintiff's donkey.
The plaintiff's donkey?
Yes, but there are mitigating circumstances.
Mitigating circumstances for whipping another man's donkey? I fail to understand.
My client says another donkey cart was coming and the plaintiff wouldn't move.
Did he ask the plaintiff to move?
Certainly not, Your Honor.
What's that?
My client says he doesn't speak the language. And the plaintiff wouldn't understand if he did. My client says, what else was there to do except push the plaintiff's donkey off the road?
The language problem in the first years following the establishment of the Jewish state in 1948 was as tangible a roadblock to Israel's future as any neighbor's donkey.
In 1948, our population numbered 600,000. Most of us could speak Hebrew.
In the 4 years following, 700,000 newcomers sought haven in Israel.
Country of origin?
Poland.
Country of origin?
Romania.
Country of origin?
Iraq.
Country of origin?
Hungary.
The tasks of existence, of survival, of development of the land were grave and difficult tasks. Tasks to challenge the best in men under any circumstances. Without a common language, they appeared insurmountable, and the great majority of newcomers could speak not one word of Hebrew.
That's not quite so.
How's that?
Most could speak a few words of Hebrew.
Oh, I wasn't aware of that.
Almost all could say, Ani lo mevin. I don't understand.
The pioneering settlers of Palestine in the years preceding 1948 adopted the Hebrew language not owing to any compulsion or outside pressure. They followed the course of an inward necessity, turning almost intuitively to the ancient Hebrew language, the language of the Bible, the tongue of their forefathers. The language shaped itself to the new creative spirit of the country. Obsolete forms were discarded. In a single generation, bookish language, rhetorical and involved in style, transformed itself into a simple, living language, realistic and precise, with a name for every object and a suitable expression for every action. The problem in 1948 was no longer the language. It was how to teach it.
Gentlemen, we must absorb the new immigrants not only economically, but spiritually and culturally. For all practical purposes, that means at the very beginning, linguistically.
There were already schools, many schools for learning the language. But the learning process in these schools was slow, and the needs of the country in 1948 were for rapid learning, for widespread learning. To accomplish the job, three main avenues were opened for Operation Hebrew.
For the children, of course, intensive work in the schools.
I am in the room. The teacher is in the room. You are in the room. We are in the room. Couldn't we go outside and play?
For the young people, the available avenue of integration was the army.
Our primary mission for today is to learn how to read a menu.
But for the older people, the thousands of immigrants from many lands, a new instrumentality was needed.
Many of these men and women coming to our shores can contribute greatly to the development of our country. Among them are engineers, doctors, teachers, lawyers, economists, technicians. We need them, and they need the language.
In the overall Operation Hebrew, some new avenue was needed. A new avenue and a new method. The Israelis found it. They called it
Ulpan.
Ulpan. Literally, a place to study.
Ulpan.
Actually, an accelerated language teaching method based on the needs of adults. Hebrew is a very dynamic language. In 1949, the word Ulpan was almost unknown. Today in Israel, you're very likely to hear,
I'm ulpaning tonight. Are you?
The first ulpan was established for professionals. It was a 5-month full-time course with the students living in.
Since that time, many kinds of ulpanim, that's the plural of ulpan, have been established.
Among them?
The work ulpan for younger people, who work half a day and study half a day in agricultural settlements.
The popular ulpan for immigrants who can give 20 hours a week to language study in the early evening hours after a day's work.
And the ulpanit, the little ulpan, designed for the bulk of new immigrants who can give but a few hours of their time for study in the evenings.
But in every ulpan, the objectives are the same.
To teach the language as rapidly as possible. To help new immigrants learn the life of their new land.
In every ulpan, certain principles of teaching are the same.
The foremost principle is that the language be taught without making use of regular translation into another language.
The methods of teaching vary. But in general, the most progressive schools follow a pattern brought to Israel 6 years ago by an American, Judah Shuval. Mr. Shuval learned of the pattern from his son. His son was studying Japanese. Where? In the United States Army. The basic methods of these schools are methods borrowed from American Army language teaching courses. How does an ulpan operate? Well, the simplest way to find out is to attend the first class of a newly formed ulpan. The teacher walks into the ulpan classroom. Seated before him are perhaps 25 students. Their origin, conglomerate. A few from Yemen, a few from Romania, one from Iraq, one from the United States. Perhaps 15 national origins are represented. A few preliminaries. The teacher points to himself.
Ani.
I. He points to a student.
Ata.
You.
Ani.
I am the teacher.
Ani medaber ivrit.
Translation, I speak Hebrew. The statement is an understatement. He will speak nothing but Hebrew from this time on, and he will insist on Hebrew and nothing but Hebrew from his students.
Ha luach.
The blackboard.
Kisei.
A chair.
Shulchan.
A table. The teacher makes an all-inclusive gesture.
Yachad.
Clearly meaning all together.
Ha luach.
Ha luach.
Kisei.
Kisei.
Shulchan.
Shulchan.
Ot pam.
Once more.
Yachad.
All together.
Ha luach. Ha luach. Halua.
Halua. Halua. Halua.
Kise. Kise. Kise.
Kise. Kise. Kise.
Shulchan.
The process has begun. A process of constant repetition, of choral recitation, of learning to form the sounds of new words, and of using these words immediately. The student makes a direct connection between the sound of the word and its meaning. His own native language is not allowed to stand between the word and its meaning. The method makes rather unusual demands upon the teacher.
Carly. Carly.
I say, what's he saying now?
Oh, he's saying Carly. Oh,
I know that, old boy, but what do you suppose it means?
Oh, wait a minute, wait a minute. I'm not sure.
Carly.
Brrr.
Carly.
Oh, it must mean he's cold.
Yes, 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 I believe you're right.
Carly.
Brrr.
Carly.
Yes, 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 that's it. Now he's turning up his coat collar. He's saying, I'm cold. I say, old fellow, is this bloke a teacher or an actor?
The Ulpan teacher must be a teacher, an actor, and often in the early weeks of the course, a defense attorney for his method.
Come in. Ah, shalom, Ludwig.
Shalom.
What can I do for you?
2 weeks I have waited. 2 weeks I have sat in my seat shouting, singing, mimicking.
Ludwig, learning a language is not an intellectual act. It's habit, drill. That's
the theory
why...
I understand. For others, perhaps it is good. For me, no. I am visual-minded. Yes, I must see the words to learn.
I understand what you mean, Ludwig.
You will give me the rules, the grammar. I will study them. I will learn. This way I learn nothing.
Ludwig,
now,
I'm
that
trying...
is the way I learned everything before, the way I studied at the university, the way I became a doctor. I ask you, please, to recommend me for a book.
Ludwig, the study of language is not the same as the study of medicine.
For others, perhaps, no. For me, yes.
I know you're a scholar, but I would like to ask you a few questions, that is, before recommending a book.
Good, ask.
Your mother tongue is German, correct?
Correct.
How did you learn to speak it? From a book? By grammar? By rules?
No, no, no. Of course not. I listened. I imitated. I spoke. But I was a child. Now I'm a grown man. It is not the same thing.
Ludwig, if you wish to make Hebrew your mother tongue, not just a second language, you must learn it the way you learned your mother tongue. I have the greatest respect for your intellectual achievements. They surpass my own by far. But for the next 4 months in this Ulpan, I must respectfully ask you to act as if you were a child.
The students in the professional Ulpan, in the language learning process, act as if they are children. But they are not children. They're doctors from Austria, businessmen from Boston, they're lawyers from Iraq, artists from France, school teachers from Holland, writers from England, and professors from Germany. They're also scientists, administrators, engineers, and accountants. But whatever their background, soon after the course begins, they ask a common question.
When do we learn to read?
And the teacher provides an answer.
Not yet.
2 weeks pass. The question is asked again.
Later.
Another week passes.
Now.
The teacher is not being perverse. He is following a pattern. The pattern of the active oral method.
First understanding, then speaking, then reading, then writing, and finally, grammar.
Compare this with the conventional language teaching in, well, let's say the United States.
First reading, writing, and grammar, next speaking, and finally, perhaps, understanding.
Everything, as you can see, is backwards in an Ulpan. Everything, that is, but results. At least 125,000 men and women have learned the Hebrew language fluently and well in the Ulpan program in the past 4 years. At the end of the 5-month intensive training period in the professional Ulpan, students can speak freely in Hebrew, read printed matter like the daily paper fluently, write clearly and simply in an unaffected and direct style. More importantly, the students have learned to think in Hebrew, an accomplishment that expresses itself at many levels and in many areas of interest. The language of the heart is learned in the Ulpan, too.
Shoshana.
Ken, Avraham.
Shoshana, ani ohav otach.
Avraham. Gamani ohevet otcha.
The marriage will take place in June. The ability to think in Hebrew, important as it is to a declaration of love, is not quite enough for professionals in the Ulpan who require specific vocabularies for the pursuit of their careers. To meet this need, the Ulpan provides special intensive one-month courses for specific professions.
For accountants, special lessons in correspondence and accountancy terminology.
For lawyers, basic legal terms.
For doctors, medical vocabularies.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? 5 months ago, we started with words like blackboard, chair, and table. Now, my students are dealing with words like sartan.
Cancer.
Atom.
The atom.
Mishpat.
Law.
Bechirot.
Elections.
And it's not just that they're learning the words, either. I'm the first one to know that. My students, mind you, people who've sat in my class, my students are getting ready to run the country.
Some will run the country, and many will contribute to it, and all will share more fully by knowing the language, in the concept of what the Israelis call demokratia, the concept of democracy. And in this better citizenship, in this capacity to live more fully with their brothers, Ulpan's role is immeasurable. For the purpose of Ulpan, the purpose of Operation Hebrew altogether, is more than the technical learning of the language.
Ulpan is a doorway to integration.
My students do not learn only to speak.
They learn to speak to one another.
My students do not learn only words.
They learn the words of citizenship, of knowledge of the country, of Israel's history.
My students do not learn only to read.
They learn to read the literature and legends of an ancient people, their people. And as they draw from the wellsprings of an ancient faith, from the Bible itself, they enrich not only their own lives, but the spiritual life of all mankind. There is the land, and there is the people. And the medium which links them in rebirth is the language of Hebrew. The language in which Ezekiel contemplated the mysteries of regeneration and resurrected hope. The language in which Amos wrote the prophecies of social justice. The language in which Isaiah proclaimed the vision of universal peace.
V'shavti et shavut ami Yisrael uvanu arim neshamot v'yashvuvam v'natu charamim.
And I will bring back the exiles of my people Israel, and they shall build the waste cities and dwell therein, and they shall plant vineyards and drink their wine, and they shall lay out gardens and eat their fruit.
V'natatim al admatam v'lo yenatku od me'al admatam.
And I will plant them upon their own soil, and they shall not be uprooted any more out of their land which I have given unto them, saith the Lord thy God.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Mr. Samuel J. Borowski, Chairman of the World Hebrew Culture Federation and Honorary President of its American branch, the Histadrut Ivrit of America. Mr. Borowski.
We have just listened to a graphic and most absorbing description of Hebrew Reborn. a many-tongued people, restored to the land of their fathers, are learning to master their ancient language to enable them to live a fuller life as citizens of the State of Israel and to link their destiny with the future of the state. The rebirth of the Hebrew language is not limited to Israel alone. It has reached considerable proportions in every country of the world, including our own. Nor are the people of the Jewish faith the only ones touched by the resurgence of the ancient tongue. Universities and public schools by the score are now teaching the language of the prophets, so that the rich storehouse of Hebrew literature can be made available in its original. This profound interest in Hebrew goes back to the very cradle of American life, with the Puritans who printed the first book of Psalms in this free land of ours in the original Hebrew. We of the World Hebrew Culture Federation, the Brit Ivrit Olamit, as we call it in Hebrew, and of its American brand, the Histadrut Ivrit of America, are dedicated to the revival of the Hebrew language to serve as a common bond between Jews who cherish the Jewish heritage and who may draw inspiration and guidance from original Hebrew sources. On August 7th, the World Hebrew Congress will meet in Jerusalem to develop plans and programs for the greater achievement of this goal. Yes, my friends, a living and flourishing Hebrew language, opening the wellsprings of our ancient faith, will enrich Jewish life and the spiritual life of all mankind, and will bring to the world the creativity of an ancient civilization, reborn and revitalized, taking in exchange the benefits of Western civilization and the goodwill and cooperation of Jewry everywhere.
Thank you, Mr. Borowski. Our Eternal Light drama today, Operation Hebrew, was written by Mark Siegel. Cantor Robert Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Featured in the cast were David Gothard, Roger DeCoven, Pamela Fitzmaurice, William Keane, Ed Keane, Alan Bergman, Guy Repp, John Moore, Louis Van Ruten, and Ruth Last. Your narrator was Norman Rose. This is Mel Brandt. The music was written by Morris Momorski and conducted by Roy Shield. This has been an NBC Radio Network production directed by Daniel Sutter. For the next 10 weeks, The Eternal Light will present a special summer series, Words We Live By, dialogues between two of America's distinguished men of letters, Maurice Samuel and Mark Van Doren. They will discuss the prophets of the Bible. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is the NBC Radio Network.